This is research that Chuck has done. In doing this, the first video he did by himself, this one is with an interviewer, and it talks about certain issues within his first tape on prophecies, where he talks of Nostradamus, Casey Montgomery, and Michael Scallion, Gordon Michael Scallion. And Chuck has always been an academic and has admitted to that, and so I always like to listen to what he puts together and then chop it up. So we're going to have an interesting session here as we watch his tape, and I will then, at the conclusion of it, we will talk about it, and I'll make some comments as to specific areas that he mentions there, and we can go from there. And I will invite your questions at that time. Thank you.
American Indian Prophecies 2. The information that will be shared by Dr. Ross is being brought to you by popular demand. Many of our viewers throughout the country have requested further comparative analyses by Dr. Ross into these fascinating subjects. Dr. Ross is the author of the best-selling books, We Are All Related, and Ihanamani, which means walks among. My name is John Belindo, and I will be your interviewer for American Indian Prophecies 2. Dr. Ross, what is the significance of the number 4 in ancient prophecies?
For the Lakota people, 4 is a symbol of the Creator. In our sacred medicine wheel, the four directions represents 4 directions, but it also represents 4 corners of the universe. And the 4 is also found in the sacred white buffalo. Each one of his legs represents one of the 4 corners, 4 directions of the universe. So it's a symbol of the Creator. This symbol of 4 is also used when we talk about the different ages that we've come through. Like the Lakota say, we've evolved through 4 ages, the Hopi, the Navajo, the Maya, Aztec. Almost all native cultures talk about the number 4. Not all use the buffalo. Some use a deer. Some use a cougar, like the Zuni, they use a cougar. But it all remains number 4. 4 is an ancient symbol that we use in our prophecies. And it's a symbol of the Creator.
And it's a sacred symbol usually applied to animals and directions.
Yes.
And it's commonly referred to as the medicine wheel.
Yes.
Could you give us an example of Native American people's understanding of cycles and clarify for us, if you would, the meaning of, quote, the end is only the beginning, unquote?
For Native people, we have a philosophy that everything evolves in a circle. Everything, not only in our culture, but in our spiritualism, our philosophy, everything is in a circle. And when you take a look at the circle, let's say this is the beginning, and you travel around and you come to the end, which is the beginning. This concept can be found in our drums, in our teepees, our homes. We're in a circle. When we camped in a circle, our villages. And then when our nations came together, they camped in a circle. Everything was in a circle. We found this in nature. We found that the sun is round, the moon is round, the seasons come in cycles. And also our spiritualism. We have a philosophy. It comes from one of our ancient stories about when you die. When you die, your spirit goes up to the Milky Way and it goes south. At the south end of the Milky Way, there's a fork. At that fork, there's an old lady that stands there. And she judges you by what you did on the earth. She asks you, what did you do while you were down there? Were you generous, cooperative? Did you get along with people, sharing? Or did you live down there for yourself, greedy, materialistic? If she found that you lived in harmony with everything, lived in balance, then you were allowed to take the long road back over the horizon. If you were found to live for yourself, greedy, materialistic, you took the short road, she pushed you off, down you came, and you're reborn again, given another chance to live in balance and harmony. Now, when I studied psychology, I found that the same sort of philosophy can be found when Edgar Cayce was interpreting the philosophy of the Bible. He said, from the center of the universe is where the Creator exists, or he said God. Well, we call it the Creator. God exists at the center, and as God expanded and came out, it came out into billions and billions and billions of individual spirits. Now, when a person is born, one of those spirits enters that person. And as that person lives its life here on the planet, depending upon whether you live in balance and harmony, what we call the red road, or living for the self, the senses, what we call the black road, that determines, when the body dies, that determines whether that spirit will be released and go back to the Creator, or if you live for yourself, when the body dies, the spirit is released and it comes back into a new body, and you're given another chance for growth and expansion, another chance to live on the red road in balance and harmony with all things. So that's a cycle. And this cyclic action permeated all of our culture, not only in our religion and our spirituality, our homes and our daily life, and everything was in a cycle. The end is the beginning is the end. So if a person dies, that's just the body. The spirit never dies. And you go on to something else.
You might say a never-ending circle of peace, balance, and harmony. And a circle that is non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
There is
exactly.
No hell, but it gives you a sense of everlasting peace and harmony with your Creator.
Exactly.
I found this to be very fascinating in your first video. You talked about people having to go underground, Dr. Ross, between each age in order to survive. Where is this place referred to as the underground?
There is no location. There is no cave.
No physical location.
Right. There is no physical location, no cave, no underground cavern where people will go to survive. The story that many tribes have about at the end of the age that we go underground to survive is an allegorical story. And what it relates to is the fact that we need to go down into the lower levels of the psyche. Now, when you take a look at, this is a Jungian, Carl Jung, Jungian model of the mind.
And I might add here that you studied Jungian psychology for 16 or 18 years.
Yes. Dr. Jung said, within the collective unconscious is the archetype of the Creator, or God, and that spirituality exists in this area of the mind. So that when a person at the end of the age is going down into the underground, it's an allegorical story for going down into the collective unconscious, making contact with the spirit world, the Creator. And it's your spirituality that's going to save you to enter the next stage. That's what the story really means.
Could you give us an illustration of how the Aztec and the Mayan calendar works? And can you speak about Jose Agreyes and what he described in his book as the Mayan factor?
The Mayan, they're the ones that started the calendar. The ones that brought it into popularity or the Aztec. This is the Aztec calendar. The Mayan calendar had this calendar and used its rhythms thousands of years before the Aztec. But let me go through the calendar and point out the cycles. This is a 20-day cycle. It represents 1 month. The first 13 are sacred, holy days. They represent 13 levels of heaven. Now, this calendar operates on what you call wheels. You take the first 13, you have a wheel with 13 cogs on it. You match it up to the 20-day wheel with 20 cogs. You put them together, you spin those two wheels around, and they have to go around 260 times before those wheels match up where they started. Now that 260 represents a sacred calendar. They take that sacred calendar, they create another wheel with 260 cogs, then match it up to the solar calendar, which has 365 cogs. Match that up, spin those wheels around, they have to go around 52 times before they match up again. 52 is their sacred, like a century. It's a sacred time. Now, in the calendar, they have nine arrowheads. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This represents that within each 52-year cycle, there are 9 negative periods. So they take that 9, they add it to the sacred 13, they get 22. They take that 22 times 52, and that comes up with 1,144. Now, inside of the center, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That represents 5 ages. Some people say that we've gone through 4, we're going into the 5th. Other people say we've gone through 5, we're going into the 6th. It doesn't matter. The thing is that each one of these ages is 5,720 years in length. And the way they get that is taking that 1,144 times 52, and that's the length. Now the end of this cycle was August 16, 1987. That's when the new cycle started according to the Aztec calendar.
So the new cycle would begin in this area here,
right?
Yes.
Now there's a book out by Jose Agreas, The Mayan Factor, and he said that let's take this apple. This is our sun. We're the planet Earth. This will be the planet Earth. We go around the planet Earth. It takes 365 days to go around the planet Earth. Now, Jose says, this solar system goes around a central sun in our whole galaxy. The central sun, this would be our solar system. Our solar system goes around the central sun. It takes 26,000 years to go around one time. Now, Jose said the central sun emits light at various degrees, various strengths, all the way around. And he said, starting in 1987, we entered a beam of light. Our solar system entered a beam of light coming from the central sun that is 25 years wide. This beam of light is made up of spirit energy, is creating the changes, preparing us for a new cycle. Now that is related to, there's a futurist named Gordon Michael Scalion. Gordon Michael Scalion says that we are in a period called the quickening. This beam of light, this spirit energy is causing an increase. Things are speeding up.
We can see that.
Intuition, instinct, healing, knowledge, information. All these things are on the increase. He said this past year, things increased threefold. He said next year, things are going to increase tenfold. Now, he talked about the good things that are coming about because of the increase. But he also says, remember, on the other side of the coin, negative things are on the increase. We have, he talked about the El Nino storms coming out of the Pacific, one right after another, all summer long. Then he talked about hurricanes coming out of the Caribbean, one after another, all during this fall, one right after another. Increase in earthquakes, increase in volcanoes, increase in crime, increase in violence. Everything is on the increase. And he said, this is all part of the purification, the days of tribulation. This is what we're in right now.
So positively, we have to prepare for expedited technological change. On the negative side, on the balance side, is also an increase in negative factors that we will have to cope and deal with.
Yes.
As people on this planet.
Yes.
I also found, Dr. Ross, that in your first video, which was completely fascinating, you gave a prophecy that in 1999, the federal government will begin to crumble or disintegrate. If this should happen, what will happen to our very fragile tribal economies across the nation?
Well, first, let me go back and tell you how I got involved in all this. In my second book, Ehana Mani, I became concerned about what was happening on the reservations. I became concerned about the state of poverty that we as American Indians are in on the reservation. So I researched, I wanted to know why are we in such a state of poverty? And as I did that, I found out it's the whole economy, it's the way the economy is set up. The economy is set up on interest rates and credit. And the bottom line is profit. And if you can't make profit, and then don't get involved, don't invest. So this is the premise for our economy. And as a result, industry does not want to move to the reservation, so we end up having no jobs. So then, unemployment is high. So then what happens is they give us welfare. So then we're on welfare. So then they turn around and they give us hell for being on welfare, when it's their system that created this mess to begin with. Now the whole system, as you could see, is based on credit. And I see our economy as a house of cards, an economic house of cards. It's inflated on credit. And I just feel that someday somebody's going to pull out the corner card. There goes our economy. That's the feeling I had. So in my second book, I made a prophecy. We're headed for an economic collapse. I don't know when. I just have a feeling that we are. And when I was doing the first video, it came across the man, the futurist, Gordon Michael Scalion. He put a time on this collapse. He said the financial collapse in America will happen in 1998.
Not too far away.
Right, and so I got to thinking, how is it going to happen? And then I studied him a little bit more, and he said that a major investor, foreign investor, will pull out the economy of America, causing a collapse. And as I started to research that, I said, what country has enough money to do that? And as I took a look at the bonds, the U.S. bonds that are available, there's two predictions. One is that 25% of our bonds are owned by foreign investors. The other is that one-third of our bonds are owned by foreign investors. And these foreign investors could pull out, and there goes our economy. So I took a look. Who has enough money, enough interest in our bonds, owns our bonds, that can do this? And so I went to the almanac and looked up, and here I found that the top 10 banks in the world, 9 out of the top 10 are Japanese. Japanese have the money. And if the Japanese own enough bonds, and if, now like their economy is in a quagmire, and they're unsure, and they're, if they want to save themselves, they could pull the money out of our system, and there goes our system. Now, I don't know if it's going to be the Japanese. I just became interested because of these predictions. And Gordon Michael Scalion says, now, when the economy collapses, the money's going to be worthless. Your money will be worthless. So he said, you need to do something with your money. Number one is put it into capital. Land, buildings, gold. You can purchase gold coins. You can get a Canadian maple leaf. 1 troy ounce for about $410. You can get a South African Cougaran, 1 troy ounce for about $410. You can put your money into these gold coins, put it in a safety deposit box in the bank. And then if it collapses, you're all right. And then if it doesn't collapse, you're still all right. So now Gordon Michael Scalion says that immediately after this economic collapse, in 1999, the federal government is going to disintegrate. He predicts Texas to be the first, if not one of the first, to pull out of our union. There will be a disintegration of the United States.
Will there be a secessionist movement along with this phenomenon?
Yes and no. Let's take Texas, for example. Texas already has in their constitution that they are a separate nation. They only joined the union in support of the other states. So, and then, when this disintegration comes, there will be a rebuilding. Several states will go together to create a new state. And the new United States, which will come about at the end of 1999, year 2000, there will be 13 states in the new union. Now, the process of this happening, we will be able to throw out the things that have not worked. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important that, we understand our system. We understand where we've gone wrong. So that when we rebuild, we'll know what works and what doesn't work. And we can throw out that doesn't work. And we'll go on and we're going to be better off for it. We're going to be a better nation.
What specifically should tribal governments do to avoid the negative fallout from a monetary physical collapse in terms of protecting their sovereignty and providing money for their people?
Well, we're going to get into sovereignty on the last question and what we can do. But specifically, what can you do as far as money is concerned is to put it into land, put it into capital, put it into gold or silver. Okay. That's what needs to happen right now.
Let's shift to another subject, Dr. Ross, that of Native American philosophy and the connection to seven stars. What is your understanding of that?
For the Lakota people, we have an oral history that says that we came from the seven stars and we became flesh and blood, and this is why we have seven tribes, and this is why the number seven is sacred to us. The location of these seven stars, incidentally they're called the Pleiades, is right in the head of the sacred white buffalo. The sacred white buffalo is made up of three different constellations, the Pleiades, Orion's Belt, and Cirrus. Now, not only Lakota, but there's the Mayas, the Aztecs, the Hopi, and there's other tribes too that say that they came from the seven stars. And I believe the Kiowa
has a
story that they came from seven stars. We came here to become flesh and blood. Now, in researching this and studying that idea, I came across a book called UFO Contact from the Pleiades, Contact from the Seven Stars. A man by the name of Billy Meyer, he's a Swiss farmer. One day he had an urge to go out to his field, or calling, a beckoning, so he left his house, he went out to the field, and there all of a sudden a UFO landed, and some UFO cosmonauts came out and they talked to him, and they told him that they were from the seven stars. And they told him that they had come here thousands of years ago and seeded this planet, and that we were their brothers and sisters. They told him that they came from a planet in the Pleiadian system called Era. And on this planet, they had a high level of technology, and they, like we, had atomic energy, and they were misusing it. This was thousands of years ago. They misused their atomic energy. So these people, the Pleiadians that came here, were escaping the atomic wars. And they came here and they seeded this planet.
Isn't there a misuse of energy between ages by different beings that led to the development of another or subsequent age?
No, the misuse caused the end of the age.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Pleiadian beings that are here say they are here right now to help us through these end times. They're here helping us. They have the ability to dissolve, to disintegrate all the atoms in their body, to become a vapor, to become a spirit. And so these spirits enter a body, and these bodies then become the great leaders, teachers, and guides that are helping us through these end times.
Amazing. I'm going to ask you a question that I know a lot of our viewers have been writing in about, and it's this. In your video, your first video, why did you not consider biblical prophecies?
The basic reason was because I didn't know any. My early childhood years, I grew up in the church. And I went to a Christian missionary boarding school. And it was the purpose of the boarding school was to make us churchgoers, not biblical scholars. And so we went to church every morning, every evening, three times on Sunday. And the whole philosophy was to get involved in the church and not really study the Bible. Later on in my life, I became involved in Native American ceremonialism and the spiritualism. And so that's where my interest was. And then I seen how traditional Native American philosophy and thought related with some of these great futurists, Casey, Nostradamus, Scalion, Montgomery. So that's how that tape came about. I showed the similarities. But because of that question, I became interested. I wanted to know, what does the Bible say in relation to what we had presented? So I went to a conference 2 months ago. It was called Prophecy for a New Millennium. And one of the speakers talked about biblical prophecies. So I want to share with you two biblical prophecies that I came across. His name is John Van Auken. The first prophecy I want to share from his book was this is Jesus' teachings on the Mount of Olives, Matthew 24, where the disciples were asking Jesus about the end times. When is it going to come? What's going to happen? And Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah. And he will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still not to come," Jesus said. Jesus goes on, he says, "Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines, earthquakes throughout the world. All of these are the beginning of birth pains." So what he's saying here is that just happens that all these things he's talking about, it's going on right now. We got Bosnia, we got civil wars in Africa. As a matter of fact, I read in USA Today about 2 months ago that there was 36 civil wars on the planet right now. So we're in these end times. These are the things that are happening. But Jesus says these are the beginning of birth times. Birth pains. That means we have to go through this suffering before we'll emerge into the 1,000 years of peace. The second prophecy I'd like to give comes from Daniel. Daniel's third vision. And the angel Gabriel came to Daniel and he told him, "Know and understand this. From the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the Messiah, the ruler, comes, the time period will be 7 sevens. Now this is in reference to, according to the Van Auken, he said, when was Jerusalem, when was Israel reborn? That was in 1948. 7 times 7 is 49. You add 49 to 1948, you get 1997. So he says that it appears that the second coming of Jesus will be in 1997. That's a prophecy from the Bible.
Christ the prophet from the New Testament prepared us for a lot of these cataclysmic events that we are witnessing now. And the Old Testament prophet is prophesying deliverance by a new Messiah. And so what that means for generations of people will mean, will that mean more prosperity, more war, or how do you interpret that?